The leaves of brown came tumbling down. Remember in September.
That's the voice of Sarah Vaughan. Mine is the voice of Rick Cogan. I'm playing Sarah Vaughan because we'll be talking about her at 10 o'clock. Welcome to the show. I don't know, frankly, what kind of doctor Corey Franklin is, but I do know that Corey Franklin is an extraordinary writer. His latest book is a collection of short, snappy, illuminating, provocative, and valuable essays called The Doctor Will See You Now, Essays on the Changing Practice of Medicine. Corey, welcome back to the show. This book was a revelation to me. I mean, you know I like your writing, but I was so grabbed by this thing. So you can take a compliment, can't you?
Thank you very much, Rick. Thanks for having me on, and happy Mother's Day to you and all the listeners.
Thank you, and all those moms out there. What kind of doctor are you, Corey?
Well, I was an intensive care doctor. I ran the intensive care unit
at County.
County.
Sure, that was your first book.
For 25 years, and I also did a little bit of outside internal medicine, just doing a clinic. But most of my time was spent in the most seriously ill medical patients in intensive care.
When did you start to become a writer? Because you are, I'm going to read some excerpts of this fantastic book, some words from your essays. But when did you start to hone this craft? Because you are very, very good. And as you know, our mutual friend Bruce Dold, who printed many of your essays in the Chicago Tribune on the editorial pages, thinks so too. But when did that happen?
Well, I wrote throughout college, and I sort of gave it up in medical school for a while. And I took it up about 10 years into my practice in the intensive care unit because there were so many good medical stories. I was an avid reader of other people's medical stories. And then people like Bruce took me under their wing, and he taught me an immense amount. So it was about 10 years after I was in my medical practice in the 80s that I really started doing it again seriously. And since I'm retired, I try and do it more and more.
Well, you obviously are very, very, very comfortable. As I said, there are a number, there must be 40 or some short essays, and I love the length of them too because they're, you know, I'm not one of those, short attention span people, but these are really quick, provocative essays. If you're up to it, I just want to plow through the book, because any book that mentions Mort Saul, Ezekiel Emanuel, Mark Cuban, and Richard Speck is my kind of eclectic book. The first chapter is, I just went for my physical. I just went for my yearly physical. You write so provocatively and somewhat alarmingly, remember your personal physician? He or she may not be yours much longer. And even if you keep your doctor, the odds are he or she is not really working for you. Soon, most doctors will have abandoned their private practices and become employees of hospitals, multi-hospital affiliations, or the government. Should we be scared?
We should be unsettled. I'm not sure scared is the right word. You know, the problem is that there's a paradox going on. Our medical outcomes are better than they've ever been before. Our life expectancy is longer, although the last 2 years, because of the opiate epidemic here in the United States, sort of leveled off. But before that, for the last 50 years, our life expectancy is better, our outcomes are better, but we've lost something because people just don't feel like they're getting personal care anymore. Some of that is a doctor or a nurse at the computer not making eye contact. Some of that's the impersonality of the large hospital systems, and that may get worse. So, you know, there's that dichotomy going on there, and I think we should be unsettled by it. I wouldn't go so far as to say worried, but it's definitely a problem that we have to address.
Well, and you address it, too, at the end of Chapter 2 of this book. You write, you're writing here about, is it smart to skip your annual physical? And the advice of Ezekiel Emanuel, a sort of leading American physician and the brother of the mayor of City of Chicago, has suggested in 2014 that most people should not live past age 75, and he as you write, it sparked further controversy, advising healthy people to forego annual physical exams. I'll tell you, Corey Franklin, I feel that I am relatively healthy, but that's one of the many reasons I go in for an annual exam, because just because I get up and I'm breathing and my eyes open may not mean that I am totally healthy, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dr. Emanuel sort of oversimplified the issue. Young, healthy people don't have to go in for an annual physical. And a lot of people don't need an annual physical, but by the same token, there are people who need certain types of checkups at least once a year, and sometimes more than once a year. So it's not simply a question of should everybody get an annual physical. It should be tailor-made. It should be personalized according to the person's medical history, according to their current condition, their social habits, and things like that. In terms of living past 75, you know, our technology is it's making it such that we're not only living longer, but we're living more productive. Yes, there are a lot of people who, as they age, we have to take care of them. They become debilitated. But there's no question we have more productive post-75-year-old people in the United States and in the world than we've ever had before. So,
well, I'm just thinking of some of the recent obituaries I've written, where Hugh Hefner died at 91, where Studs Terkel died at 96, where Art Shea, the photographer, died at 96, where Art Paul, the former art director of Playboy magazine, died at 93. And I'm thinking, man, if those guys had decided to check out at 75, the world would have missed a lot of creativity. You write here, Corey Franklin, too, in your marvelous book, The Doctor Will See You Now, Essays on the Changing Practice of Medicine. And this is so true, and I'll tell you why it's true, because I saw my doctor last week. You write here, you don't mind my reading your writing, do you, Corey?
Not at all.
I love it. You're such a talented writer, I guess we owe it all to Bruce Dold. But just talking with here, you write here, just talking with your doctor so you know he or she cares is a good way to spend a couple of minutes once a year. Yes, time spent thumbing through outdated magazines in the waiting rooms may be tiresome. Doctors have to work on that. But getting to know your physician is a good idea. It might be old school, but trust in your doctor is a vital element in your health. And that wasn't mentioned in the studies cited by Dr. Emanuel. Corey Franklin is a great writer. The book is The Doctor Will See You Now. And Corey and I will be back and see you in 2 or 3 minutes after a commercial break. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. My guest is Dr. Corey Franklin, who I consider one of America's, certainly the Midwest, and I'll call America's too, most provocative and interesting writers, mostly about the healthcare business, doctors, and TV doctors. Your chapter on Dr. Mehmet Oz is really fascinating. And I know you write a lot for the Tribune, and we are a print publication, sort of print, and whatever other media online kind of stuff. But you really do take out after Dr. Oz and the broadcast doctors here. Dangerous? I'm sounding like an alarmist, Corey, but it's disturbing that you call him unquestionably the most popular physician in the United States, if not the world. Is that a good thing?
Well, it's a mixed blessing.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Oz was a superb cardiac surgeon.
Sure.
And he's a superb communicator. And he's given a lot of great advice that's probably saved a lot of lives. But, you know, television is such a maw that takes so much information and you require so much content that he just inevitably drifted into some stuff that I know most physicians would say, well, that's a little out of bounds.
Yeah.
And that's an inevitability in that profession. And I mean, you have to work very hard to stay within the lines of what's good medical care when you have to fill so much content.
I'm going to read the beginning of chapter 14 just to give you folks, I'm going to count them, they're counted for me, 68 of these fabulous 2-3-page, few longer than that, essays in Dr. Corey Franklin's wonderful book, The Doctor Will See You Now. This one is fascinating. The lead of this, as we say in the newspaper business, as the Doles and Kogans of the world would say, here's your lead. The last thing in the world I would want to do is get on the wrong side of God, the Catholic Church, or any of my Catholic friends. But I feel compelled to say that Pope Francis, however infallible he might be in matters spiritual, is just plain wrong about air conditioning. How so, Corey?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk today that air conditioning is harming the climate and things like that. But I don't think that a lot of people today, especially younger people, realize what a major breakthrough air conditioning was in our living standards and in our health standards. I mean, we had heat waves in the early part of the century that were just devastating all across the United States, and in fact, in many parts of the world. And air conditioning has pretty much cut that, you know, dramatically, drastically. I mean, if you look at heat-related deaths before 1960 and after 1960, which is basically when most buildings started becoming air-conditioned,
sure,
it's just amazing.
Well, and also, I mean, we both, and our friend Bruce, too, and anybody who worked in the news business remembers the tragic pile of bodies that happened when Chicago had that, and the Midwest had that horrifying heat wave of about two decades ago. That's very provocative. Your chapter on Richard Speck is one of the most, I think, one of the most personal in here, because I realize you were a newspaper delivery boy, too. But what was it about Speck that haunts you to this day?
Well, you know, we've become inured to violence and multiple killings and serial killers and mass murders. But in 1966, when I was delivering papers and I was just, you know, just a young teenager, you know, Richard Speck killing eight nurses was just a very, very dramatic and a very, very haunting thing, especially because for the first two or three days, we didn't know who the killer was.
He was on the loose, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so we had this mass murderer, which, again, was much less common back then. And, you know, it was unknown, and it was a very, very scary thing. And it was, of course, on all the papers I delivered, it was all the headlines,
sure,
and front pages. So it was a traumatic thing to someone who was just, you know, growing up seeing that.
Well, Speck, I must tell you something. I wrote a piece a while ago about Frankenstein and how that monster in various incarnations still haunts my dreams. Speck haunted my dreams when I was a young man, a teenager, profoundly. I mean, that face of his, because his physical form, that pockmarked face, the incredibly ugly person, too, with that Born to Raise Hell tattooed on his arm, has haunted me forever. Here, now, chapter 22 is terribly provocative, too. In this book, Corey Franklin, The Doctor Will See You Now, do you write the headlines, too?
No, I don't write the headlines. Some of them are
Bruce Dole didn't write them. Bruce may have written some of these, didn't he?
I don't know who wrote most of them. Some of these headlines, some of the chapter titles I did write, but some of them were used in the newspapers or somewhere else.
Other publications.
Some of them I did write. Yeah.
Well, this one is, I defy anyone not to read this three-page chapter. Hospitals, scary places even for doctors. What do you mean by that, Corey?
Well, you know what? If you go into the hospital today, there's a reasonable chance something will go wrong. Now, most of the time when something goes wrong, it's not a serious mistake and it won't affect you. But there are times when things go wrong in the hospital and it can affect your health and it can even kill you. And the problem is there's no absolute defense against that. And you'd think, well, it wouldn't happen to doctors or it wouldn't happen to prominent people, but it does happen to prominent people, and it happens to doctors and doctors' families, too. It's the nature of the beast today. Some of it's impersonality, some of it's how difficult all this is, but the hospital is a scary place, and no one is immune from that. even when the doctor's a patient.
Well, I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, but many, many, many years ago, I think his name was Jim Fix, who was one of the leading runners. He had, you know, started a running magazine, went into, you know, something like to have his Achilles worked on and died in the hospital. That may just be my memory. You do a wonderful, another chapter in here, An American Disgrace, where you talk about the way our veterans are treated. You have some wonderfully apt, I think, words for Mark Cuban, who you call Mark Cuban, the billionaire sports owner and the whatever that show is called, where he, what's the name of that show he's on, Corey?
I don't know. I don't watch it.
You don't watch TV.
I think it's called Shark Tank.
Shark Tank. Thank you, Roger. Thank you. He's one of the people on Shark Tank. You call him in here in a chapter titled wonderfully, just because you are rich doesn't mean you are smart. And you call Cuban a super rich windbag who lacks the mind mouth filter, gets more publicity than he deserves. What was the, did you go to a publisher and say, hey, I really need to have my stuff collected, or did they come to you?
My publisher asked me if I would like to have my stuff collected and put into a book.
And like any writer, you said, oh no, why would I want to do that, right?
Well, I thought it would be a good idea.
it's a remarkable gathering, Corey. You got to come in, and we could talk about this. I'm not going to get into it now because I want people to, after the show's over, after they decide to go to sleep, I don't want to talk tonight about past epidemics and future threats, because I once wrote a piece about Ebola many years ago when the book first came out and that disease first raised its fatal head in the universe that it kept me awake for weeks. That did. Corey, you are an immensely, immensely talented writer. I hope you keep doing that. I don't think you have any plans to stop, do you?
No, not Rod. I hope not.
Boy, you won't. There will always, as long as Bruce Dold and I work for the Chicago Tribune, you'll always have a home here. And actually, it doesn't matter where we work, because you're such a good writer, you will find a home for your writing wherever you choose to do it. This book, you know I like you, and you know I like your writing, but this book is just, and I think the chapters are so easily digestible, that's a real bonus. I read many of them in the Tribune, but it's nice to see them between book covers. So carry on, Doc, and keep writing. I'll just refer to you forever. Not, instead of a doctor, I'll refer to you the writer, Corey Franklin. Is that okay with you?
Thank you, Rick. Onward and upward.
You betcha, pal. Thank you. Again, the name of the title of the book is The Doctor Will See You Now, Essays on the Changing Practice of Medicine, and you better believe it's changing. We'll take a little short. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I'm just boring Matt O'Shea, the alderman of the 19th Ward, about the stories I wrote over the course of 2006 when I interviewed every single alderman. Before we get into all the things that Matt is doing in the ward, specifically three upcoming things, after doing that series, I would ask anybody who seems intelligent enough to be able to put on their own clothes, why the hell would you want to be an alderman?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I was born and raised in the 19th Ward.
Yeah.
I consider myself very lucky that my parents chose that community to raise me and my siblings. And I know what a great place it has been, and I wanted to make it, continue to make it a great place and even better, so that hopefully my children would want to raise their family.
The 19th Ward encompasses, among many neighborhoods, Mount Greenwood and Morgan Park and Beverly, and it is for those of you who don't know it, those are Southside neighborhoods, and it's a ward of homes. You know what I mean? It's mostly, I wouldn't say, you know, tell me I'm wrong, Matt O'Shea, 90%, 80% single-family dwellings?
90-plus.
Is that right? Wow.
It's a community of, you know, neighbors that know one another, neighbors that look out for one another. We are a very integrated community. You know, we're Southsiders.
Yeah. Well, and and the Hessian family who helped raise you or something. I love the Hessian family.
The
all
best.
Of them. All of them, and the best.
Great people.
They say lovely things about you, too, as do most people. It is that tight-knit kind of community, it is also a community that is heavily populated by a lot of city workers, but a lot of cops and firemen.
Yes, sir. There are more first responders.
If you keep calling me sir, Bill Heschen will say, "What did you do to Matt? Why would he, Rick? Why would he call you sir?" But it is, and that's a huge motive that is sort of always on your mind, and your focus of aid and help and doing things beyond helping someone get a new garbage can. That's kind of been your focus, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, the first responders in my community. They serve on the school board, the local school council. They coach Little League.
Yeah.
They're the ones that look after the kids on their block. And I'm lucky enough to represent so many of them and have so many of them making my community stronger.
Well, so you've got this, among the many things we'll talk about tonight, this Paint the Town Blue effort, which you've already done a couple things. Thursday, you were at the International, the original House of Pancakes in Beverly. Yesterday, you were with Father Dan Brandt, chaplain of the police department, and my old friend Phil Klein. You were a celebrity bartender.
Yes, at Baracco's in the Mount Greenwood community.
And you're doing, okay, Tuesday you're going to be at, at the original Rainbow Cone, then Joseph's Restaurant. This is an effort to not just raise money, because the money being raised is in $5 and $10 and $20 things, but to sort of punctuate Phil Klein's effort as the Police Memorial Foundation. What is the Police Memorial Foundation?
So Phil Klein,
the former superintendent of
former
police
superintendent,
here, yeah.
Started the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation 14 years ago. And the foundation was started to raise funds to support the families of fallen police officers, yep. But also catastrophically injured officers in the line of duty.
See, I think a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, they think, well, they got the memorial over near Soldier Field, and that's what they do. They do so much more.
It's unbelievable, and sadly, I know many Gold Star families. Many are in my community.
Sure.
And many I've gotten to know through my affiliation with the Memorial Foundation, and the great work that they do, you know, assisting families through the worst of times. And they continue to stay with them through the years as their children are raised.
Go to college and go to college. Let me ask you, Matt, how does this kind of initiative start? Do you suggest it to Phil, or do you see Phil somewhere and you say, obviously, you must say at one point, what can I do?
Typically, Phil comes up with it and then calls me and says, I need you to do this. And in my role on the advisory board for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, we always try to take the lead in my community to say, no, we want to go out there. So this week is the Paint the Town Blue campaign, which coincides with National Police Week. And there are more than 75 businesses across the city that are doing some type of awareness fundraising effort, participating. And many of those businesses are in my community, and we tried to partner together.
I got to believe when you go to a place like Joey's Red Hots or Joseph's Restaurant or Lafayette's Restaurant and say, hey, could you do this there? There's no
yeah,
in this. They're eager, actually.
It's probably a mere formality to ask. And you know, I'm so lucky to have strong business owners in my neighborhood that want to give back and support those that protect us.
Let me ask you, you did something a year, and remind me if I'm wrong, or tell me if I'm wrong, about a year ago or something about helping to raise money for vests.
Yes.
You worked at like a car wash or something. You were washing cars or something, right?
So also working to assist the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. In 2014, Phil Klein kicked off the Get Behind the Vest initiative to purchase bulletproof vests for our police officers.
Because as many people don't know, the police department financially short, as they say, does not furnish you. You would think, right, in the best of all worlds, that your vest wears out, you go to your captain or your sergeant and go ahead and get a new vest.
Get a new one.
Yeah, that's not the way it works.
Unfortunately, officers, when they graduate from the academy, they are issued a vest.
Yeah.
That vest has a lifespan. It's 4 to 5 years. And what we found when we started that campaign was that there were officers with 15, 20 years on the job wearing the same vest. And
And that becomes a life or death situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That vest would not protect them in an incident of a catastrophic shooting.
You're listening to Matt O'Shea, who has, I think, since about 2011. When were you elected?
2011 originally.
See, I'm a genius when it comes to Alderman. I had interviewed his predecessor, Ginger Rugai, who was a wonderful woman. It goes back, I'll tell you, when it was 2006, and it was when the first Starbucks was coming into the 19th Ward. And now we live in an age where it seems like Starbucks has been here forever. We'll be back after a short commercial break, and we'll tell you what he's also the great James Skinny Sheehan has put the arm on him to do something else. But I'll tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, the job of an alderman, when an alderman is doing a good job, an alderman is busy 24 hours a day. There's no question about it. I said, Matt, we could do this on the phone. Matt goes, no, I'll come down, because that's what they do. They're workaholics. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Matt O'Shea, the alderman of the 19th Ward since 2011. Believe me, being an alderman for 6 years would put many people I know in a mental institution, because it's a lot of work. He is doing, Matt, I'm assuming most of this information about Paint the Town Blue is on your website, right?
Yes. It's also at the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation website, cpdmemorialfoundation.org.
Okay, you've just been named the president of the Special Olympics in Chicago. That is an honor, but it is also, it's an honor you can't refuse, but it's also a lot of work. What compelled you to do that beside the incredible, you wouldn't think that Skinny Sheehan, even given his name or his strength.
He didn't scare me away.
He's a very persuasive fellow, isn't he? But it's deeper than that for you, is it not?
Absolutely. Rick, growing up, my family used to bring me up to Misericordia to help out. Petey Lyon.
Sure, sure.
Used to have us up there growing up. So, children and adults with special needs was something that I was drawn to, something that I always wanted to get involved with, led a hand in. And then a few years ago, when my good friend Susan Nickel approached me and asked me would I be interested in serving Special Olympics Chicago Board, I jumped at the chance.
Yeah.
And for the last 3 years, I've been involved there. And just a few weeks ago, I was elected to be the next president.
That's amazing. That's pretty good. That is pretty good. What are the duties? Because this is the 50th anniversary of Special Olympics here, started by the great Ethel Kennedy and the former mayor named Daley. What are your duties? They're not all just ceremonial, right? You don't come out and go, "Hey, I'm here, Matt O'Shea."
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I'll bet.
What's really exciting coming up this July, and a lot of people don't realize this, Special Olympics started here in Chicago.
Yeah, I know.
In July of 1968.
Yeah.
So the 50-year anniversary is coming up. Later this summer, it's going to be a really exciting time here in the city. A lot of great events planned, but it's not a ceremonial position. There's a lot to go on with it, and at the end of the day, everything we do with the organization is for our athletes.
Yeah,
it's about the mission.
Well, it is an amazing thing, because I was a teenager when this whole thing started, and to have seen Special Olympics grow from this literally tiny event at Soldier Field that you thought, what's going to happen here, is it's this worldwide organization. And when you see those kids and young adults and older adults accomplish something and you see the smile on their face, it sets the heart on fire, I think, Matt.
You know, the Special Olympics motto, let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. There are no truer words that have ever been spoken. And as you said, just this past week we had our spring games.
Right, sure.
Here in Dunbar Park. And it was unbelievable. The smiling faces on our athletes, just competing, making friends, having a great time, and all that goes into it, our dedicated coaches and volunteers and the families of our athletes. Just a wonderful organization to be a part of.
Now, there's another thing, too. And this is another great cause. And, you know, the other thing about you, you've got to get someone's, you know, the traffic light fixed, and you've got to make sure that that alley is clean out there. That's, you know, the job of an alderman is being is like being the little mayor, is being the mayor of a little town where you have to do the real nitty-gritty. When people walk in your office and say, I want to see the alderman, it's like, I need a, it's from parking passes to broken sidewalks to trees falling down. But you have found the time, because I think of your workaholism, and you get the job. You don't have any other job. All of these other positions are volunteer positions that enhance the community and the city. This thing, the Operation Help a Hero, you're going to announce this Tuesday, right?
Yeah, we're bringing it back for the third year.
What is it?
So, Rick, about 5 years ago, we had more than 5,000 homeless veterans here in Chicago.
Heartbreaking.
And an initiative led by the mayor, we started Operation Help a Hero. This will be our third annual this May, and from Memorial Day through the 4th of July, we are asking communities across the city to step up and help a hero.
Yeah,
help our homeless vets. And as I mentioned, there were more than 5,000 homeless veterans in 2013. We have that number to somewhere between 600 and 650 today.
Wow.
Which is terrific.
Wow.
It is. We still have a lot of work to do.
Still 650, yeah.
But just to find them housing, now we've got to make that a home.
Right. I mean, you're asking for such modest little things, for kitchen trash cans, for shower curtains, for toilet paper, razors, shaving cream, hairbrushes, brooms, dustpans, for you people out there to purchase these things and make them available to these veterans. So, yeah, it's nice to have a house, but if you don't have the goods to take care of that house, you don't feel like a human being.
Right. And this has been an unbelievable experience, because I've had the opportunity through the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center, through Military Outreach USA, of meeting many of these formerly homeless veterans, and for them to give you a firsthand account of what they've been through.
Yeah.
And serving their country, not being able to find gainful employment, not being able to...
Well, and also the way they get, it has nothing to do with you or the city or anything, the way they get screwed over by the veterans' hospitals and the veterans' administration of this country. That's not for you to say, that's for me to say, because I know it. You know, my friend Mark Doyle, who has put a lot of veterans to work making T-shirts, and he's got a big T-shirt company, and he does that. You can go to cityofchicago.org/helpahero to learn more about that. You can go to, you know what, go to the 19th Ward website so you can get to know Matt O'Shea a little bit. It's a nice website. If you don't live in the ward, you can't ask him for anything. He can't help you. He can't help you get parking passes. But it's really a fascinating, really fascinating part of town. You aren't, Matt, in the couple minutes I have left, like, you aren't thinking of running for mayor, too, are you?
Jeez. No, we've got a growing list.
I'm just saying, I know you're a fan of the current mayors, but also, this is insane at this point, don't you think?
Yeah. I think we're at 9?
I think it could be 10. You have to check every half hour. That's the problem, because someone else has thrown their hat in the ring. And it's bound to filter down a little bit. And to my mind, and I think you maybe as a politician too may think this, and as a member of the city council, you know, whatever kind of debate comes out of this, as long as it's not attack, 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 it can't be unhealthy to voice issues that are about in this city.
No, that's democracy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that field now that we think is 9 or 10 is going to change dramatically between now and when the ballots are printed.
No question.
But, we have a major election in 9 months here in the city. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it sure is. It's good for people in the newspaper business, too.
Yeah, right.
Matt, it is great to meet you face-to-face. The Hessian family could not be fonder of you and your family, which says a great deal about the Southside neighborhood in which you all grew up. It is so family-oriented, and you have known one another for generations. That's why it's a very interesting ward to be an alderman of the 19th. Pleasure to meet you.
Great to meet you too, Rick.
Say hi to all the family members I've never met, but I hear they're all great.
I come from good stock, but
you
please
do.
Give my best to the Hessians.
Oh, of course. Of course. Take care. We'll be back in 2 minutes after a couple commercials.
Yeah. a beggar, be a thief, be my sunshine or my grief.
That's the voice of Sarah Vaughan, and the other voices you hear in here on After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, are Daryl Nitz, David Marienthal, Adam Karsten. And we're yet to hear from our special guest, but I'll let the boys introduce him later. These three, it is such a treat for me to be following from the very beginning, almost, the adventures of David Marienthal as he brings, as he resurrects, not just the name, but the spirit and style and joyfulness of the place that was Mr. Kelly's, the Happy Medium, and the London House. David, how are you? It is, I mean, for me, it's really, we have done a number of shows. I've done a couple of stories. It's so fun to chart this. Take us back to when it began. You came back to Chicago.
It really began with you, Rick, because we got together
at the old Ricardo's.
Ricardo's, and we had a drink there at the historic bar there.
And
I told you what I wanted to do. And
what is it? But I think even at the time, what you wanted to do was kind of you wanted to explore the legacy of your father and your uncle who ran George
Well, I wanted to explore it, and I wanted to make sure that this history was not lost. That
yeah.
was really my primary goal, was to create this archive of the music primarily, but of the stories, of the entertainers, the staff, neighborhood.
I
knew, you know, if somebody didn't do it, it was just going to go all away.
And well, if somebody didn't do it soon, too, I think, because many of the legendary performers and some of the audience members and employees of those clubs that worked for your uncle and your dad, George and Oscar Marienthal, you have interviewed how many people now, David?
Well, we have over 60 interviews now, from all the way from celebrities. We just got back from interviewing Woody Allen in New York City, Robert Klein, who both performed there early in their career. Shecky Green, the Smothers Brothers.
How have you found one of the interesting things is that I think the performers who performed at Kelly's. Mostly at Kelly's, did so in the early stages of career, and they as famous as they, you would think of someone like Woody Allen as being relatively inaccessible these days, except he doesn't promote his own films, for Christ's sake. But when you mention Mr. Kelly's to these people, you and your archivist assistant, Adam Karsten, who is many years younger than we are, which makes it fascinating for me to why he's in this thing, you have never found any of them to be reluctant. They think of it with such fondness that they will let their guard down.
Well, I think they were so young, and it really brings back a time where, you know, they were hungry artists looking yeah. for the audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, Robert Klein said he just was so happy to have that $500 a week job that he had never experienced anything that doing seven or eight shows a week for $500.
One of the interesting things is it did start as a kind of the ambition was to create a book and or a documentary and or a television series, but I think and that still is all happening. The interesting sort of turn it took was to recreate it live, and that's where you come in, Daryl Nitz, to bring back. You had an event at the City Winery, I don't know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago.
January. Yeah.
It was, Ella Fitzgerald live at Mr. Kelly's. It was certifiably, on any level, artistically, financially, a smash, was it not?
Yeah, what was crazy was that, you know, I did that show in August.
Yeah.
And I was looking for just an Ella Fitzgerald show for her centennial that had a Chicago base, and decided to do this. And then I came on here, and that's when you were like, oh, do you know David Marienthal? I'm like, no, I don't. And they're like, well, he's trying to do something, and you're trying to do something, and you guys should get together. So we did
match
it
made in match made in artistic musical heaven.
There you go. There you go. So then when we brought it to City Winery, I mean, Jeannie Tanner was really helpful in getting us in there, and Jeannie's going to be in this show. Jeannie wasn't able to be in the Ella show, but she'll be in the Sarah Vaughan show, and she had had a successful run there. So Jeannie kind of opened the door for us, and I think they were really taken with the historical aspect, and plus they are a supper club.
Yeah,
and there aren't very many supper clubs.
That is a fact. We got to take a break. You haven't even heard from Adam Karsten yet, and our special guest, who might Caleb. Even sing, huh?
Caleb Smith.
Caleb Smith, our special guest. I didn't want to blow it in case you have so many of your friends out there, Caleb, listening. Caleb Smith may indeed sing. He goes to Shy Arts. He lives near the old Regal Theater. And he is part of the upcoming Sarah Vaughan Live at Mr. Kelly's, which will be May 21st at City Winery. You can go to City Winery /Chicago Sarah Vaughan. Just Google. It's so much easier to Google City Winery and Sarah Vaughan, and you'll be able to get tickets. I'll tell you this, and then we'll get a couple more commercials, and we're going to spend the entire hour with these four gentlemen of varying ages. That's the other thing I like about it. Well, Daryl, David, and I are not varying ages, but Caleb and Adam certainly are. So fly to the front of the line at LitFest on June 9th and 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours before they're gone at Printers Row, litfest.org/FestPass. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Thou swell, thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand.
That is the voice of Sarah Vaughan, recorded live at Mr. Kelly's. She is, in a sense, coming back to life on May 21st at 7:30 at Chicago City Winery, where there will be, you know, 8 or 10 outstanding Chicago vocalists, sort of recreating. Sarah Vaughan recorded 2 albums at Kelly's and the London House, and this follows in the footsteps of the January's Ella Fitzgerald concert that sold out quickly, got rave reviews. I'm sure those people are coming back. Daryl Nitz, it's a 2-act concert. It's featuring some of Chicago's best singers. I'll read them all. Kimberly Gordon, Sophie Grimm, Lynn Jordan, Frieda Lee, LaShera Moore, my God, Daryl Nitz is going to sing.
I'm actually going to sing.
Jeannie Tanner, Ellen Winters, with a band made up of Joe Pulis-Castro on bass, my old friend Phil Gritro on drums, directed by Andrew Blunderman. Who is this young man now, this surprise guest?
Oh, this young man is Caleb Smith.
Caleb, how did you get involved with these characters?
Actually, my theater department head, she had told me about this opportunity, and I was just like, I really do want to do this, because, you know, it's something new. It's something that I've never done before. So
well, you couldn't have, you probably never heard of Mr. Kelly's.
No, I never.
Had you ever heard of Sarah Vaughan?
Yes.
Oh, you had?
Yes.
Okay. See, what do I know? now that you had to audition for this thing?
No.
Oh, they just said, well, you look like a great singer, so you can sing? What?
It was a competition, actually. So there was about 13 students from Shy Arts. I'll back up just a second. David and I were talking after the last show, and it was successful that we both, you know, I'm a school teacher.
Yeah.
And David used to be a school teacher, but, you know, we really like the fact that Mr. Kelly's gave opportunities to new artists, and so, and sort of that spirit, we wanted to do the same.
That's a great idea, fellas.
And since there's no really iconic songs in the concert of Sarah's in either of the concerts, you know, I thought, okay, we'll have a competition, and David had partnered up with Shy Arts, and the winner of that would do, you know, some, you know, real iconic Misty or Tenderly or something, you know, Brokenhearted Melody or something.
Who judged the contest?
Well, we had a great concert competition at Shy Arts, this, you know, wonderful public Chicago Public School that supports the arts with intensive arts, visual arts, and musical arts. very well run, just some super talented kids. And what was interesting is that all that roster of these talented Chicago singers volunteered their time to go over there all spring and work with the students individually.
Wow.
And I went to a couple of classes, and the rapport between these performers and the students was really
a lot of fun. What was that like for you, Caleb? Obviously, it was fun, right?
Yeah, it was really fun.
And did you learn anything about Sarah Vaughan more than you knew before? And what do you think of this place? And you may not know a great deal about it, but you must know a little something now about this place that was called Mr. Kelly's. It's obviously would be a place you, as when you are old enough to like drink, would have loved to hang out, don't you think?
Yeah.
Now, what are you going to sing at the show?
I'm going to sing Misty.
You want to sing a little of it now, or is that asking too much? It's Mother's Day. You're here with your mother, who you and your dad took her out to Longhorn Steakhouse in Orland. So you may be too tired. You want to give it a try?
Yeah.
Oh, man, how cool.
Look at me, I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree, and it feels like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand. Walk my way, and a thousand violins begin to play. Or it might be the sound of your hello, that music I hear. I get to misty the moment you're near.
Wow. Wow. Oh, that would have been easy to judge that contest. Mom, you can be very... What's your name? Denise Smith, you can be very, very proud. How old are you, Caleb?
16.
16. There's a future here.
Yeah.
Well, we have to make a shout out to Jocelyn.
Yeah. Who... So they have some teachers there at this school, Greta Pope, John Pollock, who was accompanying the kids, and a woman named Gay Klopek. I mean, their teachers are really amazing. I mean, I've done shows with Greta, and a long time ago used to hang out with John. And so I was so impressed by the caliber of teachers there. We listened to 13 kids. There were four judges. It was Kimberly Gordon, who had gone into the schools. LaShira Moore went into the schools. Sophie Grimm, they all went and met with the kids over about 5 weeks. And so people had told me how difficult it would be to judge this. And, so I had my opinions, and I decided that if I told them what I wanted, then everybody would just be like, okay, Daryl.
Yeah.
So
right.
I didn't say anything. I said, okay, listen, there was two other, it was Miss Mosley.
Deborah Bennett from the Polk Foundation.
And then Mosley.
Pat Mosley. Who's a vocalist.
So I just said to him, I go, okay, you can only give me one person. They're like, what? I said, I'm sorry. They only got two numbers to get through here. We got to crank out a winner right now. One person. So one person said Jocelyn, and another person said Jocelyn, and then Pat actually said, well, I really like Caleb. And I said, well, listen. Those two were my picks. And so this is my thought, because Jocelyn did Tenderly. I said,
gotcha.
So my pick is, and it was funny because we're standing there like this in like a little circle, and I go, so I would like to see Caleb do Misty followed by Jocelyn doing Tenderly. And Kimberly Gordon goes, oh, that's a great idea.
Well, they're going to do it live on stage.
That's how it worked.
They're going to do it live on stage on May 21st at City Winery. Go to City Winery Chicago. Or City Winery /Chicago. You can find it. You listeners are smart. We got to take a commercial break. These guys are going to be here for the rest of the show, and I promise you that Adam Karsten will not sing, but he will talk.
Let's build a stairway to the stars.
and climb. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Sarah Vaughan, recorded live at either Mr. Kelly's or the London House. I am not sure, but she is being resurrected on May 21st at City Winery in a performance show titled Sarah Vaughan Live at Mr. Kelly's. It is the collaborative effort of Daryl Nitz, David Marienthal, Adam Karsten, my special new guest, first time on the radio, Caleb Smith, who will be singing there, and eight of Chicago's most notable songbirds, as I like to say. Adam, as the younger, you're the youngest now, Caleb.
Yes.
You sang a lovely, lovely version of Misty without any backup music.
Yeah.
Adam, you are an unusual young man. You're a history major out of Loyola, right? Is it Loyola? Or
yeah, DePaul? Loyola.
Yeah, Loyola. Mm-hmm. Good memory, Rick. Means I'm not senile yet. you fell into this project enthusiastically and remain passionate about it. What is it about this era that so grabs you?
You know, that's a tough question to ask. I think part of it, I think part of it is, you know, growing up, I was fascinated with, I had older grandparents and I had, you know, baby boomer parents. And I feel like I took pieces of what they were interested in, but I also feel, you know, like between, you know, watching a lot of TV as a kid and
yeah.
a lot of movies and everything, I kind of just sponged a lot of this stuff. So
well,
it's always been an interest.
Well, you're kind of an old soul. You and David went out and recently interviewed Woody Allen, and mm-hmm. you're going to go out and interview David Mamet in the coming weeks. And you know everything there is to know about Mamet, and you want to meet. Part of it is,
yeah.
is you're getting to meet people who you were be in any other circumstance very unlikely to meet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, being such kind of a like a fanboy and you know, lover of, you know, America's cultural and artistic history, it's interesting how many people from kind of different professions and different eras and periods all kind of somehow cross paths at Kelly's, whether as an audience member or a performer or a busboy like in David Mamet.
Yeah, right, know, right,
you know,
right.
So I'm getting to meet a lot of these really interesting people that I'm like, well, I'm going to have a job where I can meet Woody Allen, Robert Klein,
David
Dick Cavett,
yeah.
David Mamet, you know. It's kind of an interesting you know, proposition. So it's really great.
Well, it's a great job for you too.
Yes.
David, you've gotten lucky, I think, even from everybody from Daryl to Adam to Caleb now. I mean, you have been able to surround yourself in this Mr. Kelly's world with fascinating people.
The team keeps growing, and, you know, certainly Adam has been a big part of it, and now you know, connecting with Daryl about the performance aspect, Caleb as well, the young people, but you know, and everybody comes to it with their own really strong motivation and interest, and that's, you know, and creativity.
Caleb, now that you've become part of this gang and gotten to know these people, is this exciting for you?
Yes, very exciting.
And why?
Because I get a new outlet, you know, something just to make me more experienced, and I love that type of stuff.
Yeah, see, this is what this whole thing's about, and this is, I think, Daryl, one of the great appeals of these shows. These shows, the Ella Fitzgerald one in January, Ella Fitzgerald Live at Mr. Kelly's, and Sarah Vaughan Live at Mr. Kelly's, which is coming up on May 21st at City Winery. These are not merely nostalgia trips for crowds that are coming in on walkers and in wheelchairs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no. At City Winery, there was such a wide range of ages. In you know, and the cool thing about it, the fact that it's a supper club, it's not something that you, like at Davenport's or some of these places, you have to be 21.
Right.
You know, it's all ages. Or even to have young students in a show, we don't need to have, you know, people of 21. We can have people younger, and people younger can come to the shows as well with their families. So there was like a lot of young people.
It kind of reminded me of Kelly's, that it was such a community of all ages, all races, all parts of the city, all coming together and having a good time. And so
I don't want to get too philosophical here, fellas, but why do you think that is, David, or Daryl and Adam and or Caleb? Is there something missing, do you think, now in contemporary entertainment where what Kelly's and the aesthetic of Kelly's represents?
Well, I think it was just really a community there where you're getting people off of Rush Street and people from all over the city, and they felt at home there. We talked to an African-American police person, and we thought, he said he was always at Kelly's, and we said, wow, this is gonna be a great interview, he's probably chasing some crooks away or something. But it turns out he came to Kelly's because he was in an interracial relationship
and was welcome
there by George Marienthal. And so this concert is a benefit for our film that we're in the process of making, and we're really getting it off the ground with our interviews. And we do have an exciting new director that's attached to it, Ted Bogosian, who's very experienced. And we've really got incredible interest in the film and support from the film through the concert as well.
Still thinking of this, you and Adam Carson, who are basically spearheading that, as a documentary then, right?
Yes, we're looking at it as a documentary, either a feature documentary or a series documentary. And this will be a great thing for Chicago to show really when Chicago was the center of creative energy.
Can I say something real quick back to what he was talking about? I work at a school in Glenview.
Yeah, right.
Two women came up to me when we did the show before. One, her name is Janine Nelson, and she listens to you all the time when I'm on.
And
other weeks. But she came up to me and she said,
only when Daryl Nitz is on.
My family would go to Mr. Kelly's. They were Japanese American, and after World War II, there weren't a lot of places that she was allowed.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman in my kitchen at my school named Pam Nelson. Pam Nelson's mother was a hat check woman at Mr. Kelly's, and Pam would come with her to work and sit in the hat check place and then get picked up by her dad, who was a police officer, like at midnight. And she said that she's got a picture that Tom Dreesen drew of her. And she goes, this was my first introduction to mixed couples and some a different type of values that even, when we think how far we've come in our culture now, there are some political movements that push it backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is a microcosm of that people are longing for again. So here's a show
that's pretty
all
well
races,
put, Daryl.
All ages, that, yeah. All these things. And I think people like to see that because that's how we really are. I live in Rogers Park for a reason.
Right.
I love the multiculturalism.
Yeah. See, I can't wait for Caleb to perform. Have you ever been to City Winery?
No, I
haven't. See, this is going to be on a number of levels really revelatory for this young man, don't you think, David? And I'm sure you and Adam will tell him story after story after story about Kelly's,
Well, then during the curriculum, Gay Kloplak and the other teachers were really steeped them in what the history of jazz was with Sarah Vaughan, as well as the history of
their teachers,
African American music and jazz, and and then also what was happening in Chicago at those times.
It's really amazing. We'll take a short little break, a couple minutes, and then I will have these four men sell the very few tickets that are left for Sarah Vaughan live at Mr. Kelly's. It's Monday night, May 21st. Starts at 7:30. It is 8, 9, 10 performers. Some of Chicago's best singers, Kimberly Gordon, Sophie Grimm, Lynn Jordan, Frida Lee, LaShera Moore, Daryl Nitz himself, Jeannie Tanner, Ellen Winters, my new friend and a future star, Caleb Smith. Someday I'll call Caleb in about 5 years and go, Caleb, could you come on the show and tell me about your new film? You go, Rick, I'm sorry. I don't have time for you anymore. Don't have time for you anymore. We'll be right back.
Hmm.
just a gigolo everywhere you go.
Welcome back. That's the last you'll hear of Sarah Vaughan until you buy tickets to go Monday, May 21st, to City Winery to see and hear Sarah Vaughan live at Mr. Kellogg's. It is resurrecting that amazing singer's time at that amazing club at the corner of Rush and Bellevue that David Marienthal, Daryl Nitz, Adam Karsten, and Caleb Smith are bringing back to life. This is not some kind of nostalgia trip. I think these four guys, Caleb, the newest member of the crowd, are resurrecting but also renewing what Kelly's was and bringing back the Kelly's spirit to a contemporary age with great contemporary performers. How do people get tickets?
Go to citywinery.com/Chicago, and it's really, they've got a nice banner ad. It's one of the first shows you'll see when you pop up there. So it's not till next Monday, but
right.
Yeah, it's right there
right.
on the
but
banner.
That, yeah, it's, you know, I don't want people going there tomorrow night. I want them going there on the 21st. What else will they see there? I mean, it is, you know, Daryl, knowing you and knowing David quite well, it will be a full kind of entertaining show, but what else? Will there be any other kind of touches of Kelly's there?
Yeah, actually, last time, and we're planning on doing it again, we put together a slideshow of some of the ads and photos from Mr.
Oh,
Kelly's
nice.
That'll, you know, they play before the show, so it kind of tries to create the, you know, atmosphere of Kelly's.
We'll also have the sizzle reel for the documentary yes. film, where you'll be able to see interviews with the Smothers Brothers, Bob Newhart, Lainey Kazan.
What I would like to mention,
Dick Gavitt.
Before we forget, is also we're actually having an auction, a raffle for several items, CDs, LPs, posters, kind of collectibles. We have all kinds of cool stuff that you can... bid on while there.
And you'd also, you two, Adam and David, would like to hear from anybody. If you're out there yes. and you once worked at Mr. Kelly's, for instance, these fellas would love to hear from you because you have interviewed a lot of former employees,
yeah.
but that's also a big part of your story and the documentary story and the stories of these clubs, the Happy Medium, the London House, and Mr. Kelly's.
Yeah, so what I would say is if anybody's listening or, you know, who has worked there or has some really exciting
or knows
story,
someone who
or
worked
knows
there,
somebody
sure.
or, you know, has some lead, you know, please let us know. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. Go to MrKellyChicago.com. You know, type it, Google Mr. Kelly Chicago. You'll find all of our links. You know, and just reach out to us if you would like to be interviewed or if you have any stories or leads. But also, I'd like to mention photos, personal collectibles, ads, knickknacks, anything tied to the club that you would be willing to donate or, you know, maybe even potentially, you know, sell to us or
sure.
work out something where we can, you know, scan it, whatever it may be, please reach out to us because, you know, we want to collect as much as we possibly can to preserve this piece of Chicago history.
And I'm no filmmaker, but I think a very cool way to end this film would be to have Caleb Smith standing at the corner of Rush and Bellevue belting out a song because it does have, you know, the great thing about this story, it does have a wonderful subtext of positive racial relations. That is one of the aspects
yeah.
of this club, not just on the part of performers, but on the part of employees and customers at a time when this crazy town was not accepting of that. So is there another one in the works after this? I know this one will be a success too.
Well, we had talked about doing something in the fall where we'd yeah. maybe get some performers that had actually played at Mr. Kelly's in London.
The idea
House
is like a night at Mr. Kelly's, maybe.
Interesting.
And then there's still Della Reese has a Della Reese at Mr. Kelly's
yeah.
and Anita O'Day.
Oh.
And so those are two possibilities. You know,
we've had good support from Tom Dreesen.
Sure.
And Lainey Kazan, and they're both very active. And
Tommy should come in and just do a show
great,
somewhere.
As well as, yeah. you know, as well as Robert Klein. We, you know, he's on Will and Grace right now, and
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And just came up right from Kelly's. And
it's a remarkable thing that you David Marienthal, started, and then Adam Karsten came on and has helped you and put together the website and working like diligently. You're such a passionate historian, Adam. And then Daryl Nitz came into the party, and he's helping put on these shows. And then Caleb Smith is about to be the sensation of the city winery. I really admire you guys for doing this.
It's been the thrill of a lifetime for me.
The thing is, fellas, it's also really, really struck a chord. I mean, I sense it from the people out there who get in touch with me, and I sense it from, you know, Howard Reich's review of the Ella Fitzgerald to-do, and yeah. He will certainly be there.
You don't want to miss this show, because these women are the top of Chicago. And
you've heard Caleb singing.
Caleb and Jocelyn are
Caleb, I think, is going to be the big draw for you guys. I cannot thank you enough. It's such an ongoing treat for me to watch this project grow and reach out. So I thank you, Caleb. No, don't let me down when you're a famous star. You come in here, and Caleb's mom, happy Mother's Day to you. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. I hope you can be as proud of your kid as this nice lady is of her son. Caleb, you got to go home and get up and go to school.
He gets up at 4.
He gets up at 4 to go to school. So your showbiz career cannot start right away. You have to go to school tomorrow, and we will be right back.